what we have to understand is that people are voting when they're choosing to buy your product, because there's always other choices. There's other ways they could be spending that money or spending that time or spending those resources. And so ultimately what they're trying to do is they're choosing between a variety of candidates, and they're going to vote for yours. And so what's going to make them vote for you? Well, it's what value am I going to get in return?
All right. Welcome to ThoughtWave, where we discuss tips, tricks, and hacks for audience.
Whoa, can I hold on? What are we hacking? What are you hacking? Are you a hack? Are you calling me a hack?
You're not a hack, Aaron. You're never a hack. You're a great guy.
I'm kind of a hack. You're a great guy. I don't know.
We're talking like MacGyver style hacks. That's what this is about. MacGyver hacks.
It feels kind of like we're appropriating like what developer slang. Like, look at me, I'm a coder, and No,
but we still do need to figure out how we're going to open each of these episodes, because we haven't really figured that out yet.
Okay, we'll get there. It just hacks. Let's put a question mark next to, in parentheses, our Google Doc where we discuss this stuff and say maybe hacks isn't the right word. Just throwing
maybe
it out
hack.
There.
Fine.
Go.
Good idea. Ready? All right. Welcome to ThoughtWave, where we discuss tips, tricks, and hacks for audience builders, entrepreneurs, and people who just want to do things. I am Chris Leith, and I'm joined by Dr. Aaron Dinnan. Dr. Dinnan, what are we talking about today?
What are we talking about? Well, it seems like we can't just ignore the big news in the room, which is, of course, the election. But I want to ask you a different version of the question, because, of course, there's plenty of people punditing on the election, the politics, the implications, all that. This podcast, what we're trying to do here is we're always thinking, like, what is the business angle here? What's the business lesson? And this is what I'm always working on my students. It's like, okay, let's try to take emotion out of this and say, what is the business lesson in here? And so let me ask you that question. Are there any interesting business lessons that you're kind of taking away?
Yeah. So similarly, I am a student of psychology and business as well. And I love to take a look at what parts of the marketing messaging worked. And I think if you look at the various campaigns, I think one thing that seemed to really work, and I coach all my clients and entrepreneurs on this, is to always first stay closest to the money. So the first thing you want to do is when you're thinking about messaging, when you're thinking about giving a sales pitch, is it's almost always the right thing to lead with what's closest to the money. And what does that mean? It means talk to your potential clients, your customers, et cetera, about how what it is that you're doing is going to make them more money or is going to save them money. So I think that was a big thing in terms of looking at the way that the various campaigns approached their marketing messaging. That, I think the Trump campaign focused, I saw a bunch of signs as I was driving down the road. And, it was like, I can't even remember exactly what it said, but something along like Trump more money, Kamala less money, or something like that was like the sign that they had put in the yard. And it was very specific to how they wanted their constituents to think about the choice that they were getting ready to make.
It's a really interesting framing because, and without trying to weigh in ethical or moral sense on it, it's just, there's kind of two choices. I'm going to do something that's going to generate additional money for me. Let's replace the word money with value, right? So really what happens, we always talk about this with social media, is that, if you want to create successful content, you have to create content that creates value for people in some way. And really then it becomes a question of what are people prioritizing as the key value for them? And by the way, that's a moving target, right? It changes with what's going on in people's lives. And so, money is an obvious store of value, and there are other forms of value. I remember when I voted here in Durham, there were a couple bonds on the ballot. And actually, I was just talking with a guy I go to the gym with every morning. He's a better human being than me. Because what happened is the bond was written on the ballots. One was for better parks in Durham. We don't have very great parks. As a parent, I could say we need some better parks. And then better roads, sidewalks, and things like that. And which we probably need as well. And what I noticed is it said on there, like, here's what the bond is for. And it was the estimated cost per $100,000 of property value that you have. And my first response into that when I saw that was I calculated in my head. I'm like, okay, so this is going to cost me an extra blah, blah, blah a year. I did the math. Here's what my property value is. Here's what that got. Okay, that's what's going to cost me a year. And you know, and it was like, it was a good chunk of money. And I was like, okay, so by voting yes, I'm going to take this money out of my pocket. And I voted yes on those bonds because, again, Durham needs better parks and the roads and sidewalks could use some help. So I was like, okay, well, I'm willing to spend that money. I hope other people are willing to spend it too. But fundamentally, right, that's the calculus, I think, that goes on in people's heads when they're voting. And what we have to understand is that people are voting when they're choosing to buy your product too, right? It's a vote, right? They're because there's always other choices. There's other ways they could be spending that money or spending that time or spending those resources. And so ultimately what they're trying to do is they're choosing between a variety of candidates and they're going to vote for yours. And so what's going to make them vote for you? Well, it's what value am I going to get in return?
I think that's a really good, really good point. And for me, as I think about this in my own business, it doesn't mean that you don't talk about all those wonderful, beautiful things that whatever it is that you're doing, you know, if you have something that's going to improve the environment, it doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about those things. But if you can create a value argument first, and you can create an argument of how this isn't going to change their cost structure very much, or it's going to put more money in their pockets, or whatever that value argument is first, and then build the good feel good argument behind it, that, you know, the environment's going to be cleaner, it's going to be a more beautiful place for you and your children. Those are important messages that shouldn't be lost, but it oftentimes it's nice to be able to check that what's closest to the money box first. And then you can build all the warm and fuzzies around it. And ultimately, in my experience, pursuing messaging like that as an entrepreneur is often the quickest route to, you know, distributing that value, to getting the sale, to making sure that customers are keen on whatever it is you're selling them.
You know what it comes to almost in my mind is it's money is a universal value. And so it's really easy to anchor around money and get lots of people to engage it, right? If you're never gonna get 100% with anything you're selling, but like money is like, I'm gonna make you more money. You're gonna have more money in your pocket, right? That's something that more people are going to align themselves with. When you start talking about the other values, parks, for example, right? Like, well, I want parks because I have young children and that makes sense for me. But someone who's, you know, whose kids are adults now, and maybe they're like, well, why would I spend money on parks, right? So that value isn't going to be as obvious, but both of us, no matter who we are going to want more money in our pockets. And so it's not that people are superficial or selfish, and that's what we want to get away from, right. Ever implying, and not that you were, but like, I kind of think you think that, but that's another story. I'm just kidding for anyone. Chris is a much nicer person than I am. I'm all about the money, but awesome. It's important to note that money is this kind of more universal thing, whereas everything else, just about everything else, honestly, I can't think of anything that's more universal positive value than money, right? And so if you want the biggest audience possible, what you're doing by anchoring into money is you're anchoring into this thing that you're sure is going to resonate with more people. So it's just opening up your opportunities, your likelihood of success.
Oh, that's really interesting. So what you're saying is like, is most people don't view acquiring additional wealth as a negative thing. And so it's a relatively safe first tip of the spear thing to build value on as a person, as an individual, because it's going to be much harder to find disagreement with that as a person, as an individual, than it might be with these other more complex issues that are being discussed.
Yeah, it's casting a wider net. And, you know, if your net, in the case of an election, is I've got to get the populace of a 350 million person country, like, well, the biggest net that I can be sure more people are going to want is money, right? The statistics tell me, the odds tell me that most people would be happy to hear I'm going to have more money in my pocket, whereas other things become contentious, right? Whether it's all the difficult topics that are out there, whether it's the abortion topic or Israel-Palestine conflict or Ukraine or, you know, or like any of those things, right? There's just a lot of division in it, but like everyone on every side wants money, right? So it's kind of the more surefire thing, which, you know, is a way to think of it, I think.
I think that's super interesting. And I think another thing that we can focus on here too is how to simplify messaging as clearly and as pointedly as possible. And one of the things that I run into with a lot of entrepreneurs is they start writing their mission statement. They start writing the marketing messaging for their product, and they're going into all the features, and they're using all of these corporate jargony words, you know. And at the end of the day, you're like, hey, I don't really understand what it is that you do here. Can you like help me clarify that? As I was starting my consulting practice, I went through, I don't know, 6 to 9 months of really trying to figure this out, having conversations with different customers. And ultimately for me, I got my message down to three core things where I said, you know, as a consultant, boutique consulting owner, I help you with three things. One, I help you find more leads, close more deals, and scale your sales teams. Okay. This is very clear. And almost everybody has problems with one of those three things. And luckily with my experience, I'm able to help with each of those three things. But if I made it more convoluted and more difficult, it would be hard to know as I'm talking to people, or as you're talking to people, like, hey, what actually is it that you do? What problem are you actually solving? So I'd actually challenge our listeners and our entrepreneurs out there to say, like, how could you actually boil down the problems that you solve into, you know, maybe those like 2 to 4 key points of value that you're bringing to your customer, and make it as tangible as possible.
I feel like I have all these fireworks going off in my head of like, oh, this makes the election, even as a result, and just elections in general, make more sense to me now. Because think about it, by the way, so you've got a big national election. Well, what's the thing that's going to appeal to the most people nationally? Well, that's going to be money. And so, okay, anchor into that. And then you could take it down to, well, like if you're doing a local election, if you're running for mayor of your town, well, that's where, you know, money in your pocket isn't going to be the thing. But then there's probably some sort of like anchor point that like, what does the town need more of? Boil it down to that thing and really just hammer that thing, because that's easy for people to understand. And you know, you're going to get kind of your biggest, broadest swath of people. And ultimately to win an election, but you can never expect to get 100%. That's not the strategy. And so, you know, your strategy is what's going to get me the biggest collection of voters.
That's exactly right. And which, I think, what you got?
No.
No, you first.
I had a thought wave coming in that was going to totally transform it. I'm scared. Yeah. Let's get out of this messy waters. But I actually still want to think about elections, because, you know, what it does is it reminds me of something that my first co-founder, Matt, brilliant guy, he always framed it in terms of an election. He said, well, what's the first thing you need to do to win an election? Because what is fundamental number one thing before you can ever possibly win an election? What needs to happen?
Tell us. What? I'm dying to know.
You got to be on the ballot, right? Like, people, you have to be electable. And everyone right. always forgets that part. It becomes critical for entrepreneurship too, because in order to for someone to choose your product, you have to be on the ballot, right? You have to be an option for them. And so here's something else I was reading about this week that I guess it, as we look for the ever incursion of how AI is going to change our lives, looks like ChatGPT, of course, rolled out the kind of the search feature that like kind of everyone knew was coming. And of course, there's Perplexity AI that's basically like a search engine that's just built around AI. But now ChatGPT has got it. And so what does this mean as search changes? And the reason I bring this up is because the way we've always thought about, you know, getting on the ballot, one of the key ways to get on the ballot if you have a product is to get into Google search results. And there would be a number of them, and you just had to put yourself on the ballot. But if AI is just going to give you, here's the answer, how the heck do you get on there? How do you get on the ballot? There's only going to be one choice.
Wow. I mean, what a great way to frame that conversation, okay? Because you know, this whole world of SEO and SEM has been our reality, I don't know, what you'd know better than I, but since maybe, early
2005, I was hired as an SEO copywriter.
Okay, there you go. So like at least as early as that, all right? And that has been the way that we have been competing, or businesses have been competing online. So they've been writing blogs and writing all these content and trying to get their ranking to be as high as they can on Google. And there's, you know, probably hundreds of millions of dollars of businesses in the world that are focused on helping companies do that thing. And so now we're getting into this situation where, like, literally right before this conversation, we were trying to figure out what was going on with your camera. And I'm like, hey, stop asking Google for this. Like, go ask this, you know, thing called Perplexity for this. And what's great about Perplexity is it goes, spits out step-by-step instructions to fix whatever problem it is that you're trying to solve. And there is no search results. It does, you know, put citations. sometimes those citations are helpful, sometimes they're not. I don't know if you've ever clicked on any of the citations on Perplexity. So
I'm still using Google. I'm a dinosaur.
Okay, fair. Yeah, I'm the innovative one here. And so, and I just got an iPhone, so get out of here. But at any rate, like you're right about this. And so the question is, what are entrepreneurs going to do in order to compete in this world where the largest portal to getting a question answered is shifting and changing in such a quick and dramatic way that SEO may no longer be the answer? Showing up in search may no longer be the answer. So what do you think, what is that thing that our audience and our entrepreneurs are going to need to do to stay ahead of the curve?
It's weird that my first thought was like, maybe we are hackers. My first thought was, how do you hack it so that the AI decides that yours is the answer? That, I mean, I guess that's the big win, right? If the AI says yours is the solution, then you've won. So are we going to start having search. So it would be AIO, artificial intelligence optimization. That's new industry. I've coined it first here. AIO industry.
Okay. So Aaron, I think what you're saying is really interesting here, because what you're essentially talking about is this like AI optimization situation. However, if AI is actually using search engine results to determine what it gives to you and which websites it cites, SEO potentially could still be underlying the results that AI is giving you, because we don't know, are they going to the thousands of pages that have the information, digesting it and giving you the best answer? The answer to that is probably no, because that would take so much time and so much compute power to handle. Maybe they're going to the first top three results on Google and then presenting you a digest of what it learned at those three different pages. So if that's the case, SEO still may be underlying the results.
That's so we'll call it AIO. So we're going to say AIO is like the next generation of SEO, which is you're basically optimizing your web pages for the search results, which are thinking as I think that the more important point here is like that seems like a pain and there's only going to be one winner. So honestly, for me, then it comes back to what I'm always thinking about, which is audience building. You know, it's the currency and the value of having big audience. If you have audience, then that's how you introduce products. It's why television is struggling so much, is they don't have audience anymore. And social media, creators, influencers, podcasters have enormous audiences. And by the way, it's not even like close, right? It's a scenario where the most watched show on the Today Show gets about 3 million viewers a day. Okay, 3 million, which sounds like a lot until you remember that. Who's the Spotify guy? I've just ranked the biggest. Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan. Yeah.
You know, I think the podcast he did with Trump had about 30 million listeners. So like, that's an order of magnitude more audience to be able to reach. There's this TikToker that I'm fascinated by. He's this young looking kid. He's maybe not that young, but he's News Daddy is what he calls himself, the number one news channel on TikTok. And if you haven't looked up News Daddy, go look up News Daddy. He gives these little snippets of news, but he has like 13 million followers on TikTok and more on YouTube and elsewhere. Think about how much bigger that is than CNN. Right, it's just this kid, and I realize he's not just a kid. I realize he's probably got a whole team around him, but he's so much bigger than CNN. So audience is the way to get around this, this kind of AI world where the AI is just going to give you one answer, I guess.
That is a very interesting point. What you're calling attention to is like one thing is this advent of AI and how we're going to be using it for search and to be findable and to get ourselves like on the, I'm using air quotes here, on the ballot. The other thing that you're bringing up is as a counter to that, all of our listeners here have an opportunity to say, all right, well, how am I actually going to start building an audience? How am I going to start going through and building video around the types of things that I want to discuss, the types of value that I want to bring to the world so that there are more ears? And what I like about that is you are more likely to own that audience over time. Because one thing that's scary, and I know a lot of people's businesses have been ruined by slight changes in algorithms with Google and other search engines, whereas when you've got an audience, you've got a video, you're putting out this video content over time, there's this process that you have to go through of harvesting that audience. So you put out the video content, like News Daddy's putting out news. well, if anything ever happened to TikTok or anything like that, well, over time, hopefully, NewsDaddy is going through and getting people into a email list and is sending out the like News Digest on a daily basis or whatever. So each of us as entrepreneurs out here are trying to think like, okay, well, if I go down this route of building this audience, whether it's through writing or video, et cetera, well, what else am I going to do in order to start harvesting those people into my own email banks and whatever else communities I want to use in order to generate value from them longer term.
Yeah, it's like a great reminder in general that relying on some other company to be always there and never changing is a bad idea. You know, you don't want to rely on search engine always being a search engine and those algorithms always being the same. You don't want to rely on, oh, I've got a bunch of followers on Instagram and therefore that's always going to be my source. You should always be thinking, these are lead gen, these are top of the funnel, and I need to push these people. I liked your word harvesting. It seems about right. You're harvesting from that big kind of audience, that big platform, and you're harvesting them into your personal bucket. Your company's bucket, and that's the value. That's the gold. I like to compare it to mining gold. You know, if you think about like gold mining, you know, it's not like there's a mountain of gold. It's a mountain of dirt, and then there's gold nuggets in there. And well, you know, you got like get your little pan, and you put dirt in, you sluice it with the water, and that gets rid of the dirt, and then you find the gold nuggets. That's what you're doing. It's about value layers and pushing people through your funnel. And by the way, this is important. I mean, this might sound inefficient, but it's actually wildly important, is because the people who get to the bottom of that funnel, the people that you, maybe harvesting isn't a word, because now I feel bad talking about like an audience like I'm harvesting you. So let's workshop that. Let's put another question mark in our Google Doc.
Cultivating. How about that?
Okay.
Nurturing.
We should coin that one. No one's ever used nurturing to describe how to deal with a funnel, right?
Yeah, never. No one has ever. Yeah.
copyright Aaron Dinnan. We're gonna nurture them, but always thinking, oh, and I lost my train of thought. But so I'm gonna get them, and those people that I get to the bottom of that funnel, like those are the people that I can create real value for, that I can sell to. And again, I want to use that word sell loosely. Those are the people who you can really make a meaningful impact in terms of the value that you deliver for them. So always be thinking, how do I mine the gold? How do I get to those gold nuggets?
I think that's awesome. There's another thought wave that's coming in, because like as you're doing this, the ability to capture those moments, when I say to capture those moments, I really mean like to capture the content, to capture the stuff that you're going to use to build value online and build an audience. You were showing me these Ray-Bans that you got the other day. I think there's some news relevant to this around Apple. Like, can you fill us in on like why you're wearing these nerdy glasses with cameras in them right now, and and what's going on? In addition, you look really creepy. Thank you for this.
Do I look smarter? I feel like I look smarter.
You do actually look like a little
reflections.
Bit.
I do look smarter. The reflections of everything are in here. I'm in love with these glasses. I'll tell you one thing about the Meta. If you are listening. And I'm sure you are, because you're always listening, I just assume. Meta, you're listening. These things have destroyed my phone, because like there's something buggy in your software. And so now anytime I like put these on, my phone crashes for a good like 5 minutes until it like figures it out. Anyway, they're just filing a complaint. But otherwise, these things are awesome, because you know there's so much like wearable tech. We've been trying to do wearable glasses for a while now. And the problem is they look goofy and you feel like awkward wearing them. But like I actually don't mind wearing these around, because I mean, I had Ray-Ban sunglasses forever. These look just like them. These are the transition lenses, Chris.
Oh, fancy. So they go dark?
They go dark when I go outside. So they become sunglasses. They're just my sunglasses. And very few people like even notice that there's little cameras. And the ones that do usually are like, oh, that's cool, because they look like normal glasses. That's the exciting thing about this. This is the thing that gives me hope. I think people are way underselling this. So it's pretty clear. Apple just announced that they're going to try to get into this wearable glasses space. And yeah, their headset was kind of a dud. I mean, really cool, but just impractical. But they're going to take what they learned from that. And I guarantee the next iWatch is going to be the Apple glasses. And it's going to be the thing that pushes wearable glasses over the edge, because that's what Apple does, right? They go into a nascent market. Everyone used to think smartwatches were goofy and creepy, and now they're everywhere. And it's because Apple got into them. And you know, everyone used to think tablets were weird. No one used them. And now, you know, Apple got into them. And so they're going to do that with glasses. And when they do, mark my words, really valuable. And these things have actually been pretty cool, right? Like having a camera just up there and all I have to do is say, hey, Meta, take a picture. And it just snaps a picture. It, you know, it gives me a much better opportunity to document what's going on in the world, what's going on in my life, and then to put that stuff into the world.
Wow. So what do you think, like for me, it's just hard for me to grasp, like wearing these, you know, attached glasses around everywhere and like capturing things. Like, why do you think they're going to be a big deal? And what do you think Apple's strategy is going to be to bring these into more of a common, you know, a common device? What do you think?
So actually it's got the Meta AI, it has Meta's AI built into it. And so you can just say, hey, Meta, and ask it a question. And what it does, so it's not augmented reality. So you can't see anything on the lenses. So it's just kind of voice prompts. But here's the thing I'm really excited about is I'm going to be wearing these things around and it's going to, you know, I'm going to look at you and it's just going to say your name. And just to know your name, like always remember names. I can't wait for that. It's going to be a salesman's best friend. But with the voice version of the prompts, you know, I can walk around and you can say, hey, Meta, look and tell me what that is. And it'll take a quick picture, it'll send it to the cloud, it'll process it, and it'll tell you what it is. And it does it, like, surprisingly well. Like, I just walked through a parking lot. Hey, Meta, look and tell me what kind of car that is. I'm like, that's a 2018 Nissan Altima. I'm like, oh, cool. Like, hey, Meta, where can I buy one of those? Oh, you can buy one. It just kind of does it. And so it's not perfect by any means. It drops it, you know, it doesn't always get it right, but you can see where things are going. And so, you know, this is just something I want to put on like people's radars because this is going to be here and much more common. I would say within the next 2 to 3 years, get ready. Apple comes into the space. We start getting augmented reality. AI starts to get quicker, faster. Like we're going to start to see wearable glasses. And I think that's really going to, that's going to be a new interface into the world that is going to be dramatically impactful. So, you know, if we want to talk about like what to look towards in the future, and again, a great, as we talked about before, like a great way of capturing content, reaching people, getting in front of people, like skate to where the puck is going, right? Wayne Gretzky, you know, don't worry about what's happening now. Worry about where the puck is going. And I'm telling you, 3 years from now, come back. I'm going to be right. I'm going to be right. I'm going to be right.
That's the future. See, I don't think I'd want glasses. Like, I'd want, like, a pin or something like that where I could do the same thing, but it's just, boop, like, right there. Because I don't want to put things on my face. It's annoying. It feels funny. I don't need glasses right now. I'm lucky, very lucky to not have to need that. But, yeah, I think the form factor is going to have to evolve along with it.
There are a lot of people who wear glasses in this world, Chris.
There are. It's going to be like, you know, did you watch the movie Her, where it was like in the pot, the phone was in the pocket and the little camera was right there all the time?
That's the one joke everyone makes. They're like, are you recording me right now? Like, and everyone, when they, you know, they know they got the glass on, they always, always say something snarky about the recording. And my answer is no, but don't worry. I'm sure Meta and Google and TikTok are recording you somewhere right now. They don't need my glasses to do it. 100%.
It is not a coincidence that you talk about something and then you get served an ad for that thing. Absolutely not a coincidence at all. Well, this was a great conversation, Dr. D. I think we covered a lot of territory around marketing, messaging, the evolving nature of how you're going to be found online through AI, some exciting, you know, technical developments and new toys that are coming out. And I think we've, you know, hopefully people coming away with some good actionable thoughts, some more thought waves, if you will, about how they might change some of their marketing messaging or be more effective at business.
I love it. Let's go.
All right.
This is the worst ending. This is the most ineffective, uncompelling. Just never subscribe. But subscribe, like, share, please. Tell all your friends. That's how you're supposed to end a podcast, Chris. Do you not know? You always end by saying subscribe, like share, review.
Share. Rate. Do cool things online. Tell your friends.
Tell the AI. Tell the AI.
Actually, here's what they need to do. They need to say how this podcast made them more money. That's what they need to talk about to their friends. So we're gonna have people who are like, I was listening to Chris and Dr. D, and they told me that I needed to stay closer to the money. So I changed my sales pitch to 1, 2, 3, and all of a sudden, like, my business grew 3x. If you're listening, do the things that we just talked about, and then come back and tell us how they helped you grow your business.
Tell everyone, ThoughtWave made you more money.
That's right. Awesome. All right. Have a great rest of your day. This has been Chris Leith and Dr. Aaron Dinan. Thank you so much for listening, and do what we just said. Like, subscribe, follow us, share it. Help us out if we helped you. Thank you so much. See you next time.